Hello, friends. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that inspired pop culture movies and shows we know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and if you're thinking about going backpacking for spring break, you may want to do so with caution after you hear about this case. You may have even seen the movie Wolf Creek, which is loosely based off the Backpack Murderers by Ivan Milat. Listener's discretion is advised. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe. Also, don't forget to check us out on YouTube at All Things Murder. New episodes on Thursdays. In the early 1990s, Australia was rocked by some gruesome killings of seven foreign backpackers in Belonglio State Forest. The tragedy became known as the Backpacker Murders, and remains one of the worst string of homicides to take place in the country. And the man behind them, Ivan Milat, maintains his innocence even after decades behind bars. Like many serial killers, Ivan grew up in a dysfunctional family. He was born Ivan Robert Marco Milat on December 27, 1944, to a poor family of Croatian immigrants in Guildford, Australia. His father was often violent, and his mother was always pregnant, okay? Ivan was number 5 of 14. Ladies, this is your daily reminder. Take your pills. 14 kids. My womb hurts just saying that. Two of his other siblings have died. Ivan and his overcrowded family grew up in a shack house in Moorbank, which was a suburb located at the outskirts of Sydney, Australia. Ivan and his siblings were enrolled in a private Catholic school, but right after class, these kids would just get into trouble, okay? They were handling knives and guns, and they were shooting targets in their parents' backyard. Like, parents, I understand you have a lot of them. Watch them. They're doing sketchy things. Ivan was a well-known delinquent to the authorities by the time he was just 13. Of course, his crimes escalated. When he was 17, he was sent to a juvenile detention center for theft. By 19, he broke into a local store. According to Ivan's older brother, Boris, who was the only family member who spoke publicly against him, he said that Ivan showed signs of psychopathic behavior at a very early age. You don't say, Boris. Interesting. When Ivan was 17, he allegedly confessed to his brother, Boris, about accidentally shooting a taxi driver during a robbery gone wrong. Like, bro, you know, it happens sometimes. Your gun goes off and people get hurt. No. Of course, he was never caught, and an innocent man was subsequently convicted and served 5 years in prison for his crime. Royally not cool, dude. Royally not cool. Then in 1971, when he was 26, he was charged with raping two female backpackers. But the sloppiness of the prosecutor's evidence got him acquitted. Ivan, thinking he got away with this, he felt like he could get away with more, and just continued to do crimes. He attempted the rape and murder of two more women in 1977, for which he was never charged. Ivan then married a woman 15 years older than him in 1984. But the marriage went south quickly because Ivan burned down her parents' house in Newcastle. I don't know about you guys, but you burning down my parents' house, it's probably not gonna work out. His ex-wife testified against Ivan in trial and said her ex-husband was obsessed with guns and known to be violent. The murders. Even before the first of Ivan's victims had been found, a bunch of backpackers were reported missing in the Belonglio Forest since 1989, including a teenage couple who was en route to Confest. The first of Ivan's victims were found on September 19, 1992, in the Ballaglio State Forest, located in New South Wales. Two runners came across a concealed corpse face down in the dirt with hands tied behind their back. Another body was found the following morning by police just 98 feet away from the first body. Dental records identified the two bodies as British backpackers Caroline Clark, who was 21, and Joanne Walters, 22, who were last seen months before in April on their way to Victoria to go fruit picking. The autopsy confirmed the two were brutally slaughtered. Caroline had been blindfolded and marched into the bush execution style, then she was shot 10 times in the head. They believe that her body was used for target practice. Remind you of anyone? Joanne was stabbed 14 times, 4 times in the chest, once in the neck, and 9 times in the back, which ultimately severed her spine. In October of 1993, a local man searching for firewood, you know, just trying to get warm and cozy, discovered bones in a particularly remote section of the forest. Like, bro, just trying to get warm. Please don't put your bodies here. After returning with police, authorities quickly uncovered two more bodies, which were later identified as a young teenage couple who had gone missing in 1989. Deborah Everest, who was 19, and James Gibson, who was also 19. James was found in the fetal position, riddled with stab wounds so deep that his spine had severed and lungs were punctured. Deborah had been beaten, her head was fractured, her jaw was broken, and she was stabbed once in the back. The locations of the teenagers' bodies confounded police as their belongings had cropped up in December of 1989, 75 miles north of where they were. The next month, a skeleton was found in the clearing along a fire trail in the forest during a police sweep. Dude, you need to get better at hiding your bodies. They're finding them. The remains were later identified as missing German backpacker Simone Schmidl, who was 21. She also was stabbed so deeply that her spine had been severed. Are you seeing a pattern here? On a nearby fire trail, two more bodies were discovered, including more German travelers, a Gabor Neubauer, who was 21, and an Anja Habschied, who was 20. They had been missing for 2 years. One of them was decapitated, and unfortunately, the investigators were never able to find her skull, and the other victim was shot 6 times in the head. The killings dominated the news, and these homicides earned the nickname Backpacker Murders, considering the killer had only targeted tourists who were hitchhiking their way through Australia. Authorities counted that between 1989 and 1992, the killer acted every 12 months. His target of choice was young travelers, both men and women, often who he picked up as they tried to grab rides from strangers from Sydney to Melbourne. See, that's why I can't hitchhike, because obviously stranger danger and you get murdered. All I want is a lift, and why do you have to kill me? Why? That's not right. The media frenzy soon conjured up past reports about Ivan and his brother, who were well known to possess firearms and lived about an hour away from the Ballaglio Forest. Interesting. However, authorities did not have enough evidence that could warrant a search of their properties, where Ivan was still living with his mommy. Mom's gonna protect me. Oh yeah, not gonna say a word. Authorities were receiving a lot of tips, and eventually they got a really good tip from a British man named Paul Onions, who is an ex-Navy member who had backpacked around Australia a few years before. So he told investigators that a man had tried to kill him on his travels, and that he believed that man was the same man responsible for the other backpacker murders. The man introduced himself to Paul as Bill, and offered him a lift while he was backpacking along the highway, but Paul grew suspicious when this guy suddenly pulled off the road. Like, hey, sir, what's going on here? Why are we stopping? Oh God, we're in the middle of nowhere. Sketchy, sketchy, sketchy. The man stopped his car in a secluded area, miles away from the highway, where he then pulled out a gun and a rope. He fired off some shots at Paul as he tried to run across the Hume Highway. Eventually, he flagged down a female driver, a Joanne Berry, yelling and pleading at her for help, like, hey, some guy is trying to kill me. She did help him escape, but the report that Paul and this now witness gave to the police was waved off and forgotten, okay? Waved off and forgotten. I just escaped a crazy guy, and you... We forgot. Sorry. Sorry, did you want us to cash in? Yeah, sorry about that. Paul saw the news about the Belanglio backpacker murders and decided, you know, let me give him a call. The Australian authorities flew him in from London to Sydney so he could identify the man, you know, who tried to kidnap and murder him. Out of the 13 photos of suspects, Paul identified his almost killer as suspect number 4, Ivan Milat.
Like, yeah, that was him, for sure. I will remember that face forever.
Meanwhile, authorities reached out to two women who had been hitchhiking in 1977 near the forest and narrowly escaped murder at the hands of an anonymous man with black straggly hair. After they were shown a series of photos, which included both Ivan and his brother Richard, one of the women identified the brothers. Together with Ivan's 1971 rape charge from the two female backpackers, authorities believe that, yeah, he's our guy for the backpack murders. Yeah, that's him. They did place an intercept on his Sydney home phone, which was owned and shared between Ivan and his sister Shirley Sorey, who some say that she was involved in the murders. And it was also a rumor that Shirley and Ivan allegedly had a sexual relationship since the 1950s. I don't know how many times I need to say this on this show. Incest is not okay. I like Game of Thrones too. That does not mean do that. No, it's gross, it's wrong, and it's gross. Investigation efforts culminated in a search of Ivan's house on May 22nd, 1994. They had teams of armed police. Everyone was dressed in their bulletproof vests. They surrounded his house. And according to an officer, Ivan laughed and mocked the lead negotiator as if it was a funny joke. I don't know about you, but if I saw a whole SWAT team surround my house, I would not be laughing. I'd probably be shitting my pants. Once a team of armed police was able to place Ivan under arrest, they searched his premises and found a postcard from someone from New Zealand who referred to Ivan as Bill. The same firearm cartridges and electrical tape was found at some of the murder scenes, and Indonesian currency. Ivan has never traveled to Indonesia, but the German victims, the two people, had spent time there right before traveling to Australia. Not smart, bro. Keeping trophies, it's not smart. But the mother load was no doubt the backpacking items and other equipment that the investigators found around his house and even inside some of his walls. Again, you're a serial killer. Rule number one, do not keep trophies. They will find them. You know they will. The items match the belongings to several of the forest victims. Authorities described the discovery as an Aladdin's cave of evidence. I don't know if you guys remember Aladdin. Rewatch that movie. Great soundtrack. Rip Robin Williams. But yeah. That cave was pretty damn big. Rewatch the movie. It had a lot of treasure. So if they're saying it was like an Aladdin's cave of evidence, like, dude, get it together. One of his victims, Simone Schmidl's sleeping bag, was with all the other sinister trophies found lying around his house. After a trial that lasted weeks, the backpacker murderer was sentenced to 7 life sentences, one for each of Ivan's victims found in Belanglio, plus 6 years for the abduction of Paul Onions without the possibility of parole. Now, although this killer has been put behind bars, there is still some mystery that shrouds the case of the backpacker murders. Mostly is, how did Ivan manage to pull off some of these murders on his own? which has led to a theory that he may have operated with an accomplice, like his brother Richard, perhaps. But they found no tangible evidence against him at all. They could not place Richard there.
To this day, police remain unsure as to whether they've uncovered all of his victims. They suspect that there are more missing persons cases dating back to the early 1970s that also could have been his doing. Now, again, because he's behind bars, that does not mean he's out of the spotlight. Oh no. In 1997, Ivan attempted to escape prison alongside a convicted drug dealer. The two failed, and the drug dealer hung himself in his cell the next day. Just saying, I don't think a drug dealer would have been the ideal person for an escape, just thinking plan-wise. Maybe someone who robbed a bank? Ivan was then transferred to maximum security super prison in Goulburn, New South Wales. Ivan Milot maintained his innocence till his death. He was working on a crusade for his innocence ever since he first stepped foot in jail. He'd written numerous letters to reporters and Australian newspapers claiming that he was innocent, including a recent letter addressed to the Sydney Morning Herald. At one point, he printed out the phrase, "Ivan is innocent," using a prison labeling machine and plastered the labels all on the prison walls. Like, I didn't do that. Not me. In an extreme endeavor, he wrote to the NSW Supreme Court, a DNA review panel, and the Attorney General's office to review his trial. He even cut off part of his finger with a plastic knife so he could mail it to the High Court to force an appeal on his case. Bro, I understand you wanted a retrial. Don't send people your finger. That's not gonna get you what you want.
Criminologist Amanda Howard, who has maintained a steady correspondence with Ivan during his time in prison, believes authorities shouldn't expect a confession from him anytime soon, not even on his deathbed. She's like, hey, I've tried. He's not gonna do it, guys. No.
Ivan Milot was diagnosed with esophageal cancer and was spending the remainder of his days in the medical ward of Long Bay Jail undergoing chemotherapy. On October 27th of 2019, Ivan Milot died from esophagus and stomach cancer at 4:07 a.m. within the hospital wing at Long Bay Correctional Center. He was 74 years old.
Family members of Ivan insist that he is innocent. His nephew and Ivan's mom, who according to one of his brothers, is the only person Ivan confessed to. But his mother always maintained that her son was not guilty and refused to say otherwise. My son is innocent, dammit. My son is innocent. But Ivan's biggest legacy, perhaps, was the fact that his murderer-like genes passed on to another generation of the family. In 2012, Ivan's great-nephew Matthew Milot and his friend Cohen Klein were sentenced to 43 years and 32 years in prison for the murder of their classmate, David Arcutiloni, on his 17th birthday. The teenagers lured their friend David to the Belonglio Forest, the same place where Ivan had committed the horrendous crimes decades ago, with the promise of just hanging out, smoking weed, and drinking. Hey, bro, could have a great birthday, but no. Instead, they murdered the birthday boy with an axe. Hopefully, the Milot reign of terror ends behind bars, and no more serial killers.
The movie Wolf Creek was an adaptation of Ivan's murders that came out in 2005. Wolf Creek itself is a real-life popular tourist site in Western Australia, but the killings said to have occurred there were made up. And that, my friends, is the story of Ivan Milot, the backpack murderer. Rest in peace to all of the victims. Thank you all so much for joining me. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and don't forget to tune in next week for a new All Things Murder. If you dare.